My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Give it to me, I'm worth it.
It is overtime on a Saturday. Max, we made it. College football is here. We got week zero football on. We got Florida State about to kick it off with Georgia Tech in Dublin. I don't understand the week zero thing. It's kind of like, to me, when you hear prehistoric, like, isn't the point of history, like, there's nothing before? Like, it's everything that's happened, so how can you be before that? How are we at week zero? Shouldn't this just be week one?
It should, but
week
like
one continued. Something?
Everyone takes like the first or week zero off for like a little bye week. So I like there. It's a little appetizer, is what I like to call it.
Yeah, I love it. I was watching some College Game Day on the way in, and it is hilarious seeing Nick Saban on the set, realizing that being on the other side is a little bit different. He's talking about they're doing their hypothetical of a 12-team playoff, and they're giving their potential teams that could make it. He goes, man, if I were back in Bama, this is the ultimate hypothetical. He named a couple of beat writers. I'd be chewing you out. Like, I just love seeing him on the other side, but it's really good to have some college football back on the television. Make sure you check some of that out today, and then we get everything really going next Saturday. I'm excited about that. Who's your college football team, Max?
I got them on right now, Florida Gators.
Oh, Florida Gators.
My little brother went to University of Florida.
Okay, that's
just
a good
graduated,
excuse. I was hoping it was a local team. I was hoping it was a local team.
If I had to pick a local team, it'd probably be Tech or Maryland.
Now we're talking. Virginia Tech. That's the team right there. And I saw that Pat McAfee had said that there's a I mean, I don't know how much he invalidates himself when he says that West Virginia is going to win the Big 12, but he picked Virginia Tech to win the ACC.
He did that yesterday?
No, he did that today. He had them in his 12-team playoff. I think there's a real chance for Tech to do something this year. I think they could make some noise.
I don't know if McAfee's brain is fully functioning at top speed.
Probably not after being in Dublin yesterday and seeing what he looked like on the McAfee show yesterday. I'm not sure that he's 100%. But, yeah, I mean, I think that Tech could make some noise this year. I'm excited to see what they can do, excited to see what the Terps can do. I think there's going to be some fun college football. I'm interested in, you know, maybe the lesser teams like a James Madison. What do they do now that their coach is gone? How do they bounce back? I'm intrigued by them. And so hopefully you know, Virginia Tech gets things rolling. As long as they don't lose to Old Dominion, maybe I'll feel good about the season.
That would be, ooh, man. But yeah, 12-team playoff, it is a whole new world of college football right now.
Yeah, and we're going to dive into some Nationals. We'll dive into some Commanders as well. But I do want to talk a little bit about the 12-team playoff. Toby Altizer with you here until 3 o'clock. You can always call in 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. You can also tweet at me at Toby_Altizer. You know, with the 12-team playoff, I wasn't necessarily a fan when they first came up with the idea. I mean, I didn't hate the BCS system. I know so many people hated it. They thought it was stupid. You only had the two teams. But there were occasionally you'd have a third or a fourth team that you felt deserved to be in that conversation. But for the most part, you felt like, okay, we know the two best teams most years. And then they expanded it to four, and you knew as soon as they expanded it to four, you said, it's going to be more down the line. And so with the four-team playoff last year, Florida State got absolutely screwed. I think that Florida State was, they absolutely deserved to be in it, and the College Football Playoff Committee got let off the hook because they were going to the 12-team playoff this year, so they could kind of do whatever they wanted, and then their excuse being, well, Florida State would have made it next year. Like, I hate that. I absolutely hate that. You go undefeated, and what's termed a Power 5 conference, it's termed a Power 5, right? That's what they call it, and yet they treated it as a Power 2 conferences with the Big Ten and the SEC.
And they still might. With the expansion and all that, too.
Well, and then so I'm listening today is we're all still getting used to this 12-team playoff. You got one of the powerhouses in the country, Notre Dame. They're an independent. They've stayed independent, and they're probably going to be independent for as long as can be. The best seed they can get is fifth, which means they cannot get a bye in the college football playoff because in order to get a top four seed, you have to win a conference. I don't know, man. I feel like if Notre Dame goes undefeated through their schedule, and it's a stout one, which Notre Dame usually has a good schedule. If they go undefeated through, they should probably get a top four seed and a bye. You could have a number one ranked Notre Dame team have to play at home week one of the college football playoff. You could have that. I don't know that I like that. So there's some tweaks, I think. But I'm coming around a little bit on this 12-team playoff. Because you make sure you get every team that deserves to be in there in. Because if we're going to argue about like the 10th or 11th or 12th best team in the nation, miss me with that. Right? Like, I'm kind of out on like, oh, well, this team could have won. Well, they probably shouldn't have lost three games then. You know? And that's the reality. You're going to have two lost teams. You're going to have three lost teams in there. No longer is it going to be about going undefeated. And so maybe it'll end up being more intriguing for us as fans because we always get a couple of week one games that are really good. Let's take a look at some of the college football slate. But we always end up with some really good games week one because of the different kickoff games and, you know, the people sponsor these various things. And so you get some fun matchups, top 25 matchups in that week one. But you don't always get that early in the season continually. You know, it's until you get to conference play and you get SEC teams facing each other. Sometimes it's kind of weak and with the Big Ten and some of these. But I think with this new layout, there's a chance that you could end up with some really, really good matchups all throughout the year. And I think that's at least intriguing if you're a fan. And I'm not necessarily one that was a huge fan of this right away. But it's come around on me a little bit. So, like, for example, next Saturday, we got some fun ones. Clemson is against Georgia at noon. That's going to be played at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. That's a good one. Trying to find some other good matchups. Miami takes on Florida. That's going to be a fun one to watch. So you've got some matchups in week one like you expect. Notre Dame takes on Texas A&M. You know, like, those sorts of matchups are fun. But I think you could get those sustainably. USC versus LSU on Sunday night. That'll be fun. And then Boston College and Florida State on Monday. So there's some fun games week one. But as we more adjust to this, where we realize that you can have two lost teams, three lost teams in these sorts of matchups, with the Big Ten, I don't know that you need to schedule these games because you're going to be facing Oregon, you're going to be facing USC, you're going to be facing, obviously, the Big Ten stalwarts like Ohio State and Michigan and all these teams. But think about an ACC school, right? I love Virginia Tech. I'm going to be working with Virginia Tech this year. I'm excited about it. But Virginia Tech, think about what they can schedule where now, instead of just having you know, the ACC schedule where you might face Pitt, you might face Boston College, and your toughest game of the year is going to be Clemson. Now, because you feel like you could still get in with two or three losses, maybe you're scheduling a Big Ten team in week one or two to see what you can get, an SEC team. And this year, Virginia Tech opens against Vanderbilt, but maybe it's another sort of higher opponent in years later. So I think this 12-team playoff, while I wasn't a fan initially, I think, Max, from playing a little bit of College Football 25 on the old PlayStation, I think it's got me coming around a little bit on it. I think it's going to be cool, too. Every single time we've had a championship-level game, whether it's a conference championship, whether it's a bowl game, a college football playoff game, it's always been neutral site. It's always been that way. And I think to an extent that obviously makes sense because it's deciding something. But I do think it's going to be cool that the 5 through 12 games, so round one of that college football playoff, the higher seed is going to be at home. So can you imagine? You've got Michigan makes it as a 5 seed, and you got to go to the Big House to win your college football playoff game. You've got to go to Lane Stadium. You've got to go down to Bama. You've got to go down to, you know, USC or something like that. And I think that's going to be cool to have some of that tradition mixed in. Because that's what college football is all about, right? The tradition, the pageantry, the fun that you get. Because that's what separates it from the NFL, right? That really is what it is the tradition and the pageantry and the passion of college football fan bases are almost unmatched, especially in American sports, but just in sports in general. It's almost similar to how a lot of these European fans feel about their soccer clubs, because it's a closeness, because you live in the area, you grew up a fan of the team, or you have a relative that went to the school. There's like a personal connection. So I think that's really cool. I'm excited to see what this does, though, because at first, I wasn't a fan. But as it's kind of gone along here, I do kind of think that it makes some sense, because you get a chance to get all these teams into the playoff, which, you know, makes up for the fact that Florida State deserved to be in last year and they didn't get in. But you also get a chance to just see the environment of college football played out. The only thing that I'll say that I don't like, and this just goes back to me being a very traditional fan, I'm not a fan of change in really any sense. You know, it took me time to come around on the pitch clock in baseball. I'm not necessarily a fan of some of the rules in football that have taken away some of the hitting that I saw as a kid. Like, all those things. I'm very traditional. But when it comes to watching bowl games that are non-college football playoff games, it used to be something that during bowl season I was excited. It could be Western Kentucky and Bowling Green suiting up for the Gator Bowl or something. I have no idea, right? It could be the most random game. You get excited to turn that on.
The Tax Slayer Bowl?
Yeah, it could be whatever. You're excited to watch a bowl game because at that point, there was only two teams that were playing for a national title, but the Rose Bowl meant something. Like, if you won the Rose Bowl but you didn't win the national title, you still feel like it meant something. You still feel like it mattered. Now, it's like, if you didn't play in a college football playoff game, your bowl game does not matter. At least that's the feeling. I know players don't necessarily feel that way, but at the same point, players do feel that way. Because if you're anybody that's going to make it potentially to the National Football League, and that's going to be your last go-round, what are you doing during bowl season? You're over there in sweatpants and a hoodie watching your guys play. You're not playing. So I think maybe some of this will add back into college football, and I think there's got to be changes to NIL and the transfer portal and all these things, because, you know, college football and college sports in general, a little bit of a mess right now with all that stuff. But in general, I think that they're going at least in the right direction here. I didn't like it at first, but I'm coming around on it. Let's get out to the phone lines, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in? We're going to get into some Nationals baseball in just a little bit as well. Let's talk to Uptown Mo. Mo, what's going on?
Hey, I'm excited about the 12-team playoff. First of all, good Saturday to you, and always enjoy the show. I'm glad you want to hear.
Appreciate it.
The thing I'm most excited about is what you said. That first round where you have to travel to that team's, the highest seed's home and play them. It sets up for big upsets. It sets up for the crowd being a big part of the nostalgia and the ambiance of the whole thing. Can you imagine an SEC team having to go to the Big Ten up north?
Oh,
you know what I mean? To play in the snow. And this is the upsets. there's going to be a team that catches fire right at the right time, and you know it's going to make the best. It's just one of those experiences. It's like when Michael Vick went down to Green Bay and beat the Packers in Lambeau for the first time. You know what I mean? Like, you're just going to have those moments. It makes it more like the NCAA tournament, whereas you get upsets in the first round or whatever. So that's what I'm excited about.
Appreciate it, Mo. Yeah, I think that, you know, you think about there's a potential that you get an Alabama or a Georgia or a team of that sort of caliber having to go up to the Horseshoe and face Ohio State or the Big House and play Michigan in that first round, or vice versa. You got one of those Big Ten schools going down to the SEC country and having to play at Bryant-Denny Stadium or one of these big-time schools down in the SEC. I think it's kind of cool because you don't get to see those matchups all that often. And instead of it being in a bowl game, as much as I appreciate the bowls, like a Cotton Bowl or some of these other, you know, big time New Year's Six bowls, instead of watching them play at the Cowboys Stadium or watching them play at some other neutral site, they're going to be playing at that home stadium and have to deal with the crazy atmospheres that are SEC schools, Big Ten schools. You know, I worked in Wisconsin for a little bit, seeing some of the atmosphere around Madison when they were gearing up for a Wisconsin Badgers football game. I mean, their kickoff's up there at 11 a.m. and people have been drinking for 4 hours before kickoff. It's absolutely wild going through Madison on a game day. I can't imagine going through Madison or any sort of other college town on a game day that isn't just a random week two game against Western Kentucky or Central Michigan, but it's against real Michigan, or it's against someone that is in the top 10 because you're playing a college football playoff game. I think it just adds a little bit more juice. I mean, think about this, Max. How about if we get a SEC school, take your pick, and we got Penn State at home in a first round of the college football playoff, and you've got a whiteout game in Happy Valley.
Be insane.
I just think those sorts of things make it cool. Now, I will say this, Max, because part of the reason I'm not a fan of some of these things is I don't like when things, even though I am a consumer, I don't like when things are geared to the consumer. Because to me, the NFL can do this because it's clearly a for-profit business. And that's, you know, it's model, obviously. The same thing with any professional league. But the difference in what's supposed to be, I think we all understand that it's not. But the idea of a college sport is you get to go to college, you get an education, you also get to play sports. It's not supposed to be just about making profit, even though that's largely what it is.
It's where we're going.
I think you're taking away a little bit of what it is for the student athlete. They're going to get to play in cool environments, they're going to get to do these things, but that's why I was so mad about the argument last year with Florida State being left out. But it's not going to make a competitive game. I don't care. That's not the prerogative, in my opinion, of a committee. Is to make it the most competitive for you and me. It's supposed to be who earned it. And the team that earned it last year was Florida State, that won every single game on their schedule, and somehow they got left out. To me, that's the issue with all of this, is it turns more into gearing it for you and me versus doing what's best for the student athlete. But in turn, maybe this will work out. It gives more guys opportunities. It's going to make it so that not only is it better product, but at the same point, guys that are, you know, and say you're ranked 10th and you play for one of these top schools, the chances before that you would play in your bowl game, almost zero, right? If you're going to the NFL. Whereas now you're going to play. And not only is that better for us, but it's also better for your teammates. Imagine if your quarterback is sitting out and you got to go out there and play your bowl game with, I mean, heck, sometimes you have a guy step in like USC last year where Caleb Williams didn't play and Miller Moss stepped in and played well. So it's not as if you don't get a chance to see some of the other guys. But how much better would it be if you're a USC teammate that you're suiting up and you're a sophomore receiver that you can't go to the NFL yet? How much better is it if Caleb Williams suits up for you to play with you? You know, like those sorts of things. So I think there's a give and take here, but I'm also not a huge fan of the commercialism that we're getting into. And I think a lot of this has to be fixed. I think it's the transfer portal and NIL and all these things. I think they got to work on a bunch of these things. But I've come around on this 12-team playoff. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and at the end of the year, it's going to make a lot of teams be in it that weren't before, because you can lose two games, three games, and still be in the conversation. So I think it's going to be intriguing. 800-636-1067, you want to hop in? We're talking a little bit about the college football playoff. I do want to talk about Dylan Cruz as well. He's going to make his debut on Monday. Our own Grant Paulson was first to report that. I want to talk about him, and then we got to talk about the Jahan Dotson trade as well. Plenty to get to here on Overtime. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. I'm Toby Altizer with Overtime here on The Fan.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks... What happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
But we may have to have a discussion about what's sitting to my right. There's a nice board that looks like a football field. He's got a bunch of cards lined up in a football formation. We might have to go through who this starting lineup is. This is pretty elite.
I kind
of
like it.
I mean, we got Brian Mitchell here, of course. We got Coach Joe. We got Joe Theismann sitting in the director's chair with his legs crossed. We got Bobby Mitchell. We might have to go through this and talk through like which side we think has the edge. I think that's something we're going to have to get into at some point today. Right now, though, we're talking about the college football playoff as we watch some college football getting underway in Dublin, Ireland. Did you watch college football game day today with the kid from Georgia Tech who's from Ireland, the punter?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a chance to see that.
Because I was wondering what the connection was. Like, when Notre Dame goes and plays over there, it makes sense. When you got Florida State and Georgia Tech, I'm like, I don't quite know what the connection is to Dublin, Ireland. But Georgia Tech's punter is apparently from just a little ways outside of where they're playing. Pretty cool story that... Apparently, he started in Ireland. He wanted to get into football because he watched it on his computer growing up. And then he went to Australia to some punting factory they have in Australia, makes sense.
They're churning them out now.
It makes sense. Australia is awesome, by the way. And they went over there, and he worked on it. And then COVID hit, and he had to go back home. And he was just punting, apparently, in like a field with a bunch of cows and all this craziness. But now he's punting for Georgia Tech, so it's pretty cool. But either way, Georgia Tech just punched one in. Florida State went down and scored. It's 8-6 now. We'll see what happens with the extra point or if they go for two as well. But the college football playoff, the 12-team playoff, I'm coming around on it. What do you say? 800-636-1067. You want to hop in? You can also tweet at me at Toby_Altizer. We got to talk about this board at some point. We also got to talk about Dylan Cruz and the Jahan Dotson trade. But right now, let's get out to Mitch in Jersey. Mitch, what's going on?
Toby, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
First of all, I hope you have a 10-year contract for Dylan Cruz. Dylan, I'm going to lose him now.
Don't lose him.
That's watch next time. It's a little crazy, 12 teams. You'll leave out undefeated, you know. If Notre Dame was 11-1 against Florida State being 12-0, they would have taken the Irish. I like all these quarterbacks. Quarterbacks in college football. And DJ has no excuse. He's going to win now. There's no excuse for GJ Uiagalelei to not win today and win big time against Georgia Tech. Come on.
Yeah, DJ.
That should be a good conference.
DJ's got to show out today.
Definitely. Because I think he's a first-round draft choice. And Pac-12, ridiculous that so much talent there and some commissioner, president, couldn't get it down and make money for everybody.
Yeah.
But there's a chance that this year could have five guys in this 12-team playoff. And I'm a USC guy.
Okay.
And I think Ducks, the Huskies, Big 12. I mean, Cal's got a good quarterback. And Big 12, Arizona and Utah could be up close to winning that conference because it's not that strong. But the only good thing about breaking up these two, Big 12, Pac-12, these other conferences get stronger. And I have all the conference TV except for the Pac-12. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely, Mitch. Yeah, taking a look at some of the quarterbacks. You mentioned some of the top quarterbacks around the country. Let's take a look at some of the guys that if you're maybe not as big a college football guy, but you want to figure out who the top quarterbacks are that you could potentially see drafted next year. So I think the Heisman favorite right now is Dylan Gabriel in Oregon. He transferred from Oklahoma, the lefty. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch this year with the Ducks. Caden Salter. At Liberty, he was a lot of fun to watch last year. Dual threat guy. I'm intrigued by what he's going to be able to do. A lot of people are projecting that Liberty's going to make it in the 12-team playoff because one group of five school will make it. Noah Fifita at Arizona, someone to keep an eye on. He's more of a pocket passer. Carson Beck, he's dating a Cavender twin, so you know he's got some dog in him.
Some juice.
But he's solid. It's interesting because you always have the one guy pop up. Like, Jaden Daniels wasn't supposed to be what Jaden Daniels was going into last year, and all of a sudden he's the best quarterback in the country last year. So we'll see who pops up. Kyle McCord, Jalen Milroe maybe in that sort of ilky, although he was really good last year, but he's going to continue to grow. DJ Uiagalelei, he's been an interesting one to watch throughout his college career because at Clemson, if you remember, like, he was the one that was supposed to fill in for Trevor Lawrence when Lawrence went to the NFL. And when Lawrence, for whatever reason, did he miss a game or something? DJ stepped in his freshman year and looked awesome. And so everyone assumed that as soon as Lawrence went to the NFL, that DJU was going to take over and do really well. And he was terrible for Clemson. Horrible. And then he ends up going to Oregon State. Oregon State had a really good year last year. Now he's with Florida State after Jordan Travis went to the NFL. So I'm really intrigued by how he does. Quinn Ewers, I like a lot out of Texas. Jackson Dart is someone I'm a big fan of at Ole Miss. And so there's going to be a lot to watch. Riley Leonard at Notre Dame filling in for Commanders quarterback Sam Hartman now in the NFL. There's going to be a lot of fun teams this year. And it's going to be intriguing to keep an eye on some of these NFL draft quarterbacks as they get going. All right, let's take a break from college football as we're keeping an eye on Florida State and Georgia Tech in week zero of college football. I want to get into Dylan Cruz and the Washington Nationals. We'll get into a little deep dive a little bit later with Bobby Blanco of Masson coming up at 2:30. But I want to talk about Dylan Cruz making his debut. What kind of defensive position should he have long term? We kind of assumed that the future of this baseball team, they were kind of set in the outfield with James Wood, with Dylan Cruz, and a lot of people would throw in Robert Hassel, who was someone that was acquired in the Juan Soto deal as well, and maybe he'd be the third outfielder, and we assumed that you'd have a couple guys that would be fine in center field. Jacob Young is playing tremendously good center field this year, arguably, and I don't even know it's arguable. He's playing the best defensive center field of anybody in baseball. What does that mean for Dylan Cruz as he comes up and makes his debut on Monday, as our own Grant Paulson reported? We'll talk about that next. You're on The Fan, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in? You can also tweet at me, at Toby_Altizer. Welcome back. It's overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until 3 o'clock. It's like football overload today, Max. I got to my left, got college football week zero on to my right. I've got this cardboard that we're going to have to get through. Not cardboard, like, but trading cards on a board. All right? And we got to go through this. It's got a bunch of all-time greats from Redskin football team commander history. Mostly Redskins, because they're the only team that actually won in this city. A football team that won in this city. But we're going to go through that a little bit later. Right now, though, we're talking about the Washington Nationals. Our own Grant Paulson was first to report that Dylan Cruz, the number one prospect for the Nationals, number two pick out of LSU, which, by the way, the Wizards, they really screwed this up. They had a chance, you know. You could have gone number two out of LSU.
Mystics could have done it, too, out of LSU.
But they didn't go there. I don't know who would have made it out of LSU. I think I'd rather take Sar.
Right.
But maybe we can say he's from LSU. We can just say that Alex Sar is from LSU. But regardless, another number two pick from LSU, Dylan Cruz, is set to make his major league debut on Monday. And so, where does he fit defensively? And not necessarily for this year, because this year to me is, it's not irrelevant, but it's kind of a feeling out process, and I'm more intrigued to see what he looks like at the plate. I know that he can play center field. I know that. If you've watched him play at all, he won a gold glove there at LSU. He's talented in center field, and that's something that stood out because, you know, if you follow the minor leagues, I think in general a lot of Nats fans have been a little bit disappointed with the bat. Little bit, not to say that he's been bad, but he hasn't dominated for any extended stretch, although his last week of play has been really, really good. OPS over 1,000, I think 4 home runs and 15 RBIs or something like that in his last 10 games. So he's been going really well lately. But it's been basically an 800 OPS, 810, 815, somewhere around there at every single level he's gone to. And so it hasn't been dominant. Like you saw with James Wood at AAA, we're wondering like, hey man, when's this guy going to be in the big leagues? He's dominating AAA. He's been ready. He dominated in spring training. We said he should have been on the opening day roster. Like, when's this kid going to be up, right? Well, with Dylan Cruz, that hasn't necessarily been the case. So the bat has been a little underwhelming, although I wouldn't say that it's been bad. And I think the expectations that we threw on him were maybe a little bit unjust to the point that he was underwhelming while he was having a really good season by just about every other standard, but you were expecting him to be the superstar in the minor leagues that he just hasn't been yet, which is fine. But I think when you look at him, his defense has really stood out. He's been much better defensively than I think a lot of people expected, even though he did win that gold glove at LSU. His ability to just track down fly balls in center field and track everything all over the outfield as a center fielder has been very impressive. Very, very impressive. And I think he could be gold glove caliber maybe at the major league level, although I don't know that he has the range of some of these other guys, like a Michael Ciani, even a Jacob Young, who we're going to talk about. But I think he could be a really, really, really good gold glove caliber type, right, center fielder for the Nationals. I think he could be fantastic there. But also his base running has been really, really good. It was something that at LSU, it just wasn't in their game plan that they were going to steal a lot of bags. This year, he's stolen a lot more bags for the Nationals. And that's something he talked about coming out was he wanted to be much more aggressive on the base paths. This is a guy that has the ability to steal bases. He just didn't do it at LSU. He's doing it for the Nationals this year. So I'm intrigued by what he's going to be able to bring. But I think the big question here is long term. We're not talking just the last 40, 50 games of this year. We're talking long term, next year, the year after that. When you're starting to plan out, if you're looking at this, if you're Mike Rizzo and you're starting to get things going, then what is the plan for the outfield? What's the plan for what you're going to do with these guys as they continue to get ready and get called up? What's the plan? Well, Dylan Cruz would make sense in center field. I just laid it out for you. I think he can play a gold glove caliber defense in center field. So theoretically, when you're looking at best players, you kind of just plug them in where they should be, right? You would think that James Wood, he could play a really good center field as well. I kind of want him in a corner. You know, it's similar to how I don't necessarily love that the Yankees are deploying Judge in center field. They're doing it more so out of necessity because, you know, Soto can't play in center field. So they, out of necessity, they're not going to play Verdugo or Soto there. They're going to play Judge there, which is incredible for a guy his size to be able to play center. I think that James Wood could play a really good center as well. But you leave him in a corner, you get rid of some of the wear and tear, and it's not as much put on his plate. So he doesn't have to, you know, cover so much ground. You just, any way you can help a guy that size not have to give a little bit extra effort and keep him off his feet just a little bit, you do that. Just to, for longevity and to help in a 162-game season, which, heck, the thing that I've applauded the Nationals for that I really like, Since they've called up James Wood, Max, dude hasn't taken off a day. They've just thrown him out there every single day. Love it. He's young. Get him the reps, especially in left field, a new position for him. I love it. But so you would generally think that Dylan Cruz immediately slots in center field. But there's been a wrench in this plan. Because initially the plan was Dylan Cruz in center, probably Robert Hassel or James Wood in right, and then Hassel in the other one wherever James Wood doesn't slot in. That was the initial plan. And then you've got House at third base. You've got Yo-Yo, their second-round pick from last year's draft, probably at first base. You got CJ. Luis Garcia's kind of writing his name in there. You know, the first-round pick that they just put it, drafted this year, Seaver King, does he stay at short? Can he play the outfield? So you've got some options going forward. But Jacob Young wasn't even in their top 30 prospects last year on MLB Pipeline. Let that sink in. Jacob Young wasn't even a top 30 prospect for the Nationals last year. And yet, somehow, he's come up and he has played the best defensive center field in all of Major League Baseball this season. And it really, there's only two or three guys that even are in the same conversation. One of them is in St. Louis, and you saw him make a couple of incredible catches when he was at Nationals Park up against the scoreboard in right center field, Michael Ciani. Dalton Varsho is another one. But really, Jacob Young, I don't think was a part of the long-term plan here in Washington for the Nationals until he came up last year and started playing incredibly well. And then this year, it was more so like, okay, JY is going to be here. And then he's just really taking command of center field to the point that he's got to be a part of the plans. So this goes back to the original question. Where does Cruz fit in defensively? Offensively, he's going to be batting in the top five basically every single day. Him and Wood are the future of the Nationals in that outfield in terms of at the plate. But I think with Jacob Young, because a lot of people on Twitter, I saw this, and part of the reason this got brought up is I saw a lot of people on Twitter like, okay, what does that mean for Jacob Young? Do you move on from him? What do you do with Jacob Young? And to me, I understand that you want a better bat out of Jacob Young. If we just look at some of his offensive numbers this year, it's not as if they're incredibly impressive, but you look at his profile as a player. It's more so get on base, steal some bags. He's never going to hit a lot of home runs. He's only got two this season. But on the season, he's hitting .251. He scored 63 runs. He stole 30 bags. His on base is .312, but his slug is only .324. And I know a lot of people are like, okay, can he drive the ball a little bit more? Can he add a little more power to his game? And in my opinion, I don't think it matters. I don't think he needs to add power. Because Jacob Young, every single day, is getting ridden into the nine hole. If you're a traditional baseball fan, a traditional baseball knowledge at all, nine hole hitter is like writing them off. Usually that's a guy that either is the worst player on the team or they're a defensive stud that just doesn't hit very well. Well, Jacob Young fits into the defensive stud that we still don't know if he can hit very well. He's never going to hit home runs at a high rate. He's going to peak out at like five if he gets around in a bunch. You know, it took him 191, I think, career plate appearances before he just hit one over the wall the first time ever. So he's just not going to. If you go watch him take batting practice, he's not even hitting home runs and batting. He's not trying to. That's not who he is. But I think that he can give you enough where he's stealing 30 bags. He scored 63 runs this year. His on-base is up to .312 now. If he can have a career similar to what D. Gordon had, D. Strange Gordon now, if you remember him, not with the Nationals, but back with the Dodgers and back with Miami. You know, I was watching an emotional home run of his the other day where it was the only home run he hit. It was after Jose Fernandez passed away. He was crying as he was coming around the bases because he didn't hit home runs very often. It was a cool moment for him. But he didn't hit home runs a whole lot. That's part of why that moment was so emotional for him. He didn't hit home runs a whole lot. But his on base generally in the really good stretch of his career for 7 or 8 years was somewhere around 330, 335, 340-ish. I think if Jacob Young gets up to 330, 335, 340 on base, it doesn't matter what his slug is, because to me, if he can get on base, whether it's a single, whether it's a walk, hit by a pitch, if he can get on to first base and he can steal, let's say 40, 45 bags like he might finish this year with, and he plays gold glove center field, what more do you need out of a nine-hole hitter? And he's an elite center fielder, arguably the best in baseball this year. So to me, that means that you're going to slot Dylan Cruz into right field. And what this means is, defensively, they're going to be the opposite of what the Phillies were for years, where the Phillies had Schwarber running around out there, couldn't catch anything. You got Nick Castellanos out there. Terrible defensively in the outfield, especially the corners. The Nationals are going to have three center fielders patrolling in left, center, and right. They're going to have James Wooden left, and he can cover ground. We all know that. Jacob Young, the best range of any center fielder in baseball this year. And Dylan Cruz, someone that could easily play center field at a really good rate in right field. And so you'd have a spectacular defensive outfield. I think that's where he slots in. But I'm interested in the conversation we need to have next, because I put this out there yesterday on Twitter. And if you want to chime in, feel free, 800-636-1067. Also, I had to put a tweet out at Toby underscore Altizer. You can always go back and give your response there as well. I said, with the emergence of JY in center field as a Gold Glover, where do you want to see Dylan Cruz play long term? Cruz can clearly handle center field, but JY has been one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball this year. What's the play? Got a response from one of listeners to Bustin' Loose Baseball, the podcast I did with Grant Paulson about the Nationals. And I'm sure we'll have an in-depth conversation about that coming up as well. But he put out, Ben Dennison said, the drop-off from Jacob Young in center field to Dylan Cruz, which we don't know what that gap is going to be, and I'm not even saying that it's a hugely significant gap, but the gap that you would have there has to be larger than the drop-off of a potential corner outfield bat to Jacob Young. And I think that's really intriguing. I think that's a really good conversation to have. What is that drop-off? Because if you could bring in a legit corner outfield bat, someone that can help you out in the middle of the lineup, maybe you have to have the discussion of saying, all right, we're going to bring in a corner outfielder, and we're going to move Cruz back to center field, and JY is going to become the fourth outfielder. It's an intriguing discussion. We'll have it next here on The Fan, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in, or you can tweet at me, at Toby underscore Altizer. At 1 o'clock, I just can't put it off any longer, Max. We got this beautiful board in here.
We have to talk about it.
Football cards from Damon and Oxon Hill in the B. Mitch and Finley studio. We got to go through this. This is fantastic. We're going to do that coming up at 1 o'clock. But right now, we're taking a look at Dylan Cruz and where does he fit defensively? Because I think that one of the listeners to Bustin' Loose Baseball tweeted at me yesterday with a really good point, and Ben Dennison was the one, saying that if you're going to leave Jacob Young in center field and move Dylan Cruz to right field for the long term, or at least for the next couple of years, the drop-off from JY to Dylan Cruz has to be larger than the drop-off that you would get from a corner outfield bat to what you're going to get with Jacob Young's bat. And I don't have an issue necessarily with Jacob Young batting ninth, getting on base at a 330-ish clip, stealing a bunch of bags. But let's take a look at some free agents that maybe you could sign in the offseason that you could beef up the batting order a little bit and give some guys some help. I mean, realistically, you look at this offense right now, they're definitely going to need some help. They're just going to, and especially at some corner outfield spots, you could use it. Juan Soto's the big one, and this is a theory that I think is absolutely hilarious, and I hope it's true. I don't know that it is. The theory that part of the reason that Dylan Cruz is debuting on Monday is because Juan Soto is coming back to town, and everybody wants, or Mike Rizzo wants Juan Soto to realize he could be playing with Dylan Cruz and James Wood and company back at Nationals Park with a full park that's going to be excited. Might be a lot of Yankees fans, but it's still going to be a full park on Monday. He wants him to realize maybe you could come home, and I think it's also hilarious going on Twitter and you see this guy that's saying every single time, and heck, if you're going to be at the ballpark on Monday, I think this is a great campaign to get behind, so I want to make sure to spread the word. If you are at the park on Monday, when Juan Soto comes to the plate, we're chanting, come home, Soto.
Yeah, we are.
I love that. Absolutely love it. I think that Juan never wanted to leave here.
That's what he said. One pursuit takes, he's posting that graphic now.
Yeah, I don't think that he wanted to leave here. I don't know if it's necessarily something now that he wants to come back. But if you could bring Juan Soto back, Mike Rizzo would go down with one of the greatest trades. It's already incredible, but if he were to bring Juan Soto back, it'd be one of the greatest trades, if not the greatest trade, in not only baseball history, but sports history. You get James Wood, you get Mackenzie Gore, you get C.J. Abrams, and there's still a couple of more guys, like Hassel you don't want to forget about, and Susana's been really, really good. And you brought the guy back in just a couple of years when your team was probably going to lose 90 to 100 games anyways, even if Soto is here? I don't know, man. But think about this, the drop-off. So we're taking a look at The Athletic, the top free agents that the Nationals could potentially sign as corner outfield bats. Juan Soto is obviously number one. Cody Bellinger, Teoscar Hernandez, some of these guys are probably unattainable for the Nationals if they're not going to spend money. Obviously, if you're going to bring Soto back, then that would mean you're going to have to open up the wallet big time. I don't know if that's something that would happen. We can all dream. But if you're not going to open it up for Soto, I doubt you're doing it for Bellinger or Teoscar Hernandez. Santander, maybe you consider him. Last night was electric at Camden Yards with the home run that he hit. So I don't know that maybe you could consider him. Tyler O'Neill, I'm not a huge fan of that. Michael Conforto, Verdugo, Max Kepler. Now you're getting into the range. When you start getting down past, you know, Anthony Santander, a Tyler O'Neill, I don't know, man. I like Tyler O'Neill. But at that point, I'd keep Jacob Young in center field. To me, if you get any of these top four guys, Santander, Teoscar, Cody Bellinger, obviously Soto, fine. I'll move Jacob Young into a fourth outfielder role. But if you're going to go with a Tyler O'Neill or a Michael Conforto or an Alex Verdugo, I'd rather just go ahead and keep Jacob Young in center field and move Dylan Cruz to right field. 800-636-1067, you want to hop in. Let's get out to PJ, who is in Reston. PJ, what's going on?
Hey, happy Saturday, everybody. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day. Hope it's starting out beautiful for everybody. So I have a little bit more of a kind of a question, because I admittedly, when it comes to hockey and baseball, I don't really watch it that much. I'm kind of like a very staunch, like, MMA, NFL, and basketball watcher.
Sure.
And but I will watch the Nationals and the hockey, just not as much, more of like a playoff kind of guy. But I've been following the Nationals a lot this year because even though I don't watch them that much, I really love the way that Mike Rizzo is rebuilding.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through...
you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back. It's overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until 3 o'clock. It's like football overload today, Max. I got to my left, got college football week zero on to my right. I've got this cardboard that we're going to have to get through. Not cardboard, like, but trading cards on a board. All right? And we got to go through this. It's got a bunch of all-time greats from Redskin football team commander history. Mostly Redskins, because they're the only team that actually won in this city. Football team that won in this city. But we're going to go through that a little bit later. Right now, though, we're talking about the Washington Nationals. Our own Grant Paulson was first to report that Dylan Cruz, the number one prospect for the Nationals, number two pick out of LSU, which, by the way, the Wizards, they really screwed this up. They had a chance, you know. You could have gone number two out of LSU.
Mystics could have done it, too, out of LSU.
But they didn't go there. I don't know who would have made it out of LSU. I think I'd rather take Sar.
Right.
But maybe we can say he's from LSU. We can just say that Alex Sar is from LSU. But regardless, another number two pick from LSU, Dylan Cruz, is set to make his major league debut on Monday. And so where does he fit defensively? And not necessarily for this year, because this year to me is, it's not irrelevant, but it's kind of a feeling out process, and I'm more intrigued to see what he looks like at the plate. I know that he can play center field. I know that. If you've watched him play at all, he won a gold glove there at LSU. He's talented in center field. And that's something that stood out because, you know, if you follow the minor leagues, I think in general, a lot of Nats fans have been a little bit disappointed with the bat. A little bit. Not to say that he's been bad, but he hasn't dominated for any extended stretch, although his last week of play has been really, really good. OPS over 1,000, I think 4 home runs and 15 RBIs or something like that in his last 10 games. So he's been going really well lately. But it's been basically an 800 OPS, 810, 815, somewhere around there at every single level he's gone to. And so it hasn't been dominant. Like you saw with James Wood at AAA, we're wondering like, hey man, when's this guy going to be in the big leagues? He's dominating AAA. He's been ready. He dominated in spring training. We said he should have been on the opening day roster. Like, when's this kid going to be up, right? Well, with Dylan Cruz, that hasn't necessarily been the case. So the bat has been a little underwhelming, although I wouldn't say that it's been bad. And I think the expectations that we threw on him were maybe a little bit unjust to the point that he was underwhelming while he was having a really good season by just about every other standard, but you were expecting him to be the superstar in the minor leagues that he just hasn't been yet, which is fine. But I think when you look at him, his defense has really stood out. He's been much better defensively than I think a lot of people expected, even though he did win that gold glove at LSU. His ability to just track down fly balls in center field and track everything all over the outfield as a center fielder has been very impressive. Very, very impressive. And I think he could be gold glove caliber maybe at the major league level, although I don't know that he has the range of some of these other guys, like a Michael Ciani, even a Jacob Young, who we're going to talk about. But I think he could be a really, really, really good gold glove caliber type, right, center fielder for the Nationals. I think he could be fantastic there. But also his base running has been really, really good. It was something that at LSU, it just wasn't in their game plan that they were going to steal a lot of bags. This year, he's stolen a lot more bags for the Nationals. And that's something he talked about coming out was he wanted to be much more aggressive on the base paths. This is a guy that has the ability to steal bases. He just didn't do it at LSU. He's doing it for the Nationals this year. So I'm intrigued by what he's going to be able to bring. But I think the big question here is long term. We're not talking just the last 40, 50 games of this year. We're talking long term, next year, the year after that. When you're starting to plan out, if you're looking at this, if you're Mike Rizzo and you're starting to get things going, then what is the plan for the outfield? What's the plan for what you're going to do with these guys as they continue to get ready and get called up? What's the plan? Well, Dylan Cruz would make sense in center field. I just laid it out for you. I think he can play a gold glove caliber defense in center field. So theoretically, when you're looking at best players, you kind of just plug them in where they should be, right? You would think that James Wood, he could play a really good center field as well. I kind of want him in a corner. You know, it's similar to how I don't necessarily love that the Yankees are deploying Judge in center field. They're doing it more so out of necessity because, you know, Soto can't play in center field. So they, out of necessity, they're not going to play Verdugo or Soto there. They're going to play Judge there, which is incredible for a guy his size to be able to play center. I think that James Wood could play a really good center as well. But you leave him in a corner, you get rid of some of the wear and tear, and it's not as much put on his plate. So he doesn't have to, you know, cover so much ground. You just, any way you can help a guy that size not have to give a little bit extra effort and keep him off his feet just a little bit, you do that. Just to, for longevity and to help in a 162-game season, which, heck, the thing that I've applauded the Nationals for that I really like, since they've called up James Wood, Max, dude hasn't taken off a day. They've just thrown him out there every single day. Love it. He's young, get him the reps, especially in left field, a new position for him. I love it. But so you would generally think that Dylan Cruz immediately slots in center field. But there's been a wrench in this plan. Because initially the plan was Dylan Cruz in center, probably Robert Hassel or James Wood in right, and then Hassel in the other one wherever James Wood doesn't slot in. That was the initial plan. And then you've got House at third base. You've got Yo-Yo, their second-round pick from last year's draft, probably at first base. You got CJ, Luis Garcia's kind of writing his name in there. You know, the first round pick that they just put it, drafted this year, Seaver King, does he stay at short? Can he play the outfield? So you've got some options going forward. But Jacob Young wasn't even in their top 30 prospects last year on MLB Pipeline. Let that sink in. Jacob Young wasn't even a top 30 prospect for the Nationals last year. And yet somehow he's come up and he has played the best defensive center field in all of Major League Baseball this season. And it really, there's only two or three guys that even are in the same conversation. One of them is in St. Louis, and you saw him make a couple of incredible catches when he was at Nationals Park up against the scoreboard in right center field, Michael Ciani. Dalton Varsho is another one. But really, Jacob Young, I don't think was a part of the long-term plan here in Washington for the Nationals until he came up last year and started playing incredibly well. And then this year, it was more so like, okay, JY is going to be here. And then he's just really taking command of center field to the point that he's got to be a part of the plans. So this goes back to the original question. Where does Cruz fit in defensively? Offensively, he's going to be batting in the top five basically every single day. Him and Wood are the future of the Nationals in that outfield in terms of at the plate. But I think with Jacob Young, because a lot of people on Twitter, I saw this, and part of the reason this got brought up is I saw a lot of people on Twitter like, okay, what does that mean for Jacob Young? Do you move on from him? What do you do with Jacob Young? And to me, I understand that you want a better bat out of Jacob Young. If we just look at some of his offensive numbers this year, it's not as if they're incredibly impressive, but you look at his profile as a player, it's more so get on base, steal some bags. He's never going to hit a lot of home runs. He's only got two this season. But on the season, he's hitting .251. He scored 63 runs. He stole 30 bags. His on base is .312, but his slug is only .324. And I know a lot of people are like, okay, can he drive the ball a little bit more? Can he add a little more power to his game? And in my opinion, I don't think it matters. I don't think he needs to add power. Because Jacob Young, every single day, is getting ridden into the nine hole. If you're a traditional baseball fan, a traditional baseball knowledge at all, nine hole hitter is like writing them off. Usually that's a guy that either is the worst player on the team, or they're a defensive stud that just doesn't hit very well. Well, Jacob Young fits into the defensive stud that we still don't know if he can hit very well. He's never going to hit home runs at a high rate. He's going to peak out at like five if he gets around in a bunch. You know, it took him 191, I think, career plate appearances before he just hit one over the wall the first time ever. So he's just not going to. If you go watch him take batting practice, he's not even hitting home runs and batting. He's not trying to. That's not who he is. But I think that he can give you enough where he's stealing 30 bags. He scored 63 runs this year. His on base is up to .312 now. If he can have a career similar to what D. Gordon had, D. Strange Gordon now, if you remember him, not with the Nationals, but back with the Dodgers and back with Miami, You know, I was watching an emotional home run of his the other day where it was the only home run he hit. It was after Jose Fernandez passed away. He was crying as he was coming around the bases because he didn't hit home runs very often. It was a cool moment for him. But he didn't hit home runs a whole lot. That's part of why that moment was so emotional for him. He didn't hit home runs a whole lot. But his on base generally in the really good stretch of his career for 7 or 8 years was somewhere around 330, 335, 340-ish. I think if Jacob Young gets up to 330, 335, 340 on base, it doesn't matter what his slug is. Because to me, if he can get on base, whether it's a single, whether it's a walk, hit by a pitch, if he can get on to first base and he can steal, let's say 40, 45 bags like he might finish this year with, and he plays Gold Glove center field, what more do you need out of a nine-hole hitter? And he's an elite center fielder, arguably the best in baseball this year. So to me, that means that you're going to slot Dylan Cruz into right field. And what this means is, defensively, they're going to be the opposite of what the Phillies were for years, where the Phillies had Schwarber running around out there, couldn't catch anything. You got Nick Castellanos out there. Terrible defensively in the outfield, especially the corners. The Nationals are going to have three center fielders patrolling in left, center, and right. They're going to have James Wooden left, and he can cover ground. We all know that. Jacob Young, the best range of any center fielder in baseball this year. And Dylan Cruz, someone that could easily play center field at a really good rate in right field. And so you'd have a spectacular defensive outfield. I think that's where he slots in. But I'm interested in the conversation we need to have next, because I put this out there yesterday on Twitter. And if you want to chime in, feel free, 800-636-1067. Also, I had to put a tweet out at Toby underscore Altizer. You can always go back and give your response there as well. I said, with the emergence of JY in center field as a Gold Glover, where do you want to see Dylan Cruz play long term? Cruz can clearly handle center field, but JY has been one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball this year. What's the play? Got a response from one of listeners to Bustin' Loose Baseball, the podcast I did with Grant Paulson about the Nationals. And I'm sure we'll have an in-depth conversation about that coming up as well. But he put out, Ben Dennison said, the drop-off from Jacob Young in center field to Dylan Cruz, which we don't know what that gap is going to be, and I'm not even saying that it's a hugely significant gap, but the gap that you would have there has to be larger than the drop-off of a potential corner outfield bat to Jacob Young. And I think that's really intriguing. I think that's a really good conversation to have. What is that drop-off? Because if you could bring in a legit corner outfield bat, someone that can help you out in the middle of the lineup, maybe you have to have the discussion of saying, all right, we're going to bring in a corner outfielder and we're going to move Cruz back to center field and JY is going to become the fourth outfielder. It's an intriguing discussion. We'll have it next here on The Fan, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in or you can tweet at me at Toby underscore Altizer. At 1 o'clock, I just can't put it off any longer, Max. We got this beautiful board in here.
We have to talk about it.
Football cards from Damon and Oxon Hill in the B. Mitch and Finley studio. We got to go through this. This is fantastic. We're going to do that coming up at 1 o'clock. But right now, we're taking a look at Dylan Cruz and where does he fit defensively? Because I think that one of the listeners to Bustin' Loose Baseball tweeted at me yesterday with a really good point, and Ben Dennison was the one, saying that if you're going to leave Jacob Young in center field and move Dylan Cruz to right field for the long term, or at least for the next couple of years, the drop-off from JY to Dylan Cruz has to be larger than the drop-off that you would get from a corner outfield bat to what you're going to get with Jacob Young's bat. And I don't have an issue necessarily with Jacob Young batting ninth, getting on base at a 330-ish clip, stealing a bunch of bags. But let's take a look at some free agents that maybe you could sign in the offseason that you could beef up the batting order a little bit and give some guys some help. I mean, realistically, you look at this offense right now, they're definitely going to need some help. They're just going to, and especially at some corner outfield spots, you could use it. Juan Soto's the big one, and this is a theory that I think is absolutely hilarious, and I hope it's true. I don't know that it is. The theory that part of the reason that Dylan Cruz is debuting on Monday is because Juan Soto is coming back to town and everybody wants, or Mike Rizzo wants Juan Soto to realize he could be playing with Dylan Cruz and James Wood and company back at Nationals Park with a full park that's going to be excited Won't be a lot of Yankees fans, but it's still going to be a full park on Monday. He wants him to realize maybe you could come home. And I think it's also hilarious going on Twitter and you see this guy that's saying every single time, and heck, if you're going to be at the ballpark on Monday, I think this is a great campaign to get behind. So I want to make sure to spread the word. If you are at the park on Monday, when Juan Soto comes to the plate, we're chanting, come home, Soto.
Yeah, we are.
I love that. Absolutely love it. I think that Juan never wanted to leave here.
That's what he said. One Pursuit Takes keeps posting that graphic now.
Yeah, I don't think that he wanted to leave here. I don't know if it's necessarily something now that he wants to come back. But if you could bring Juan Soto back, Mike Rizzo would go down with one of the greatest trades. It's already incredible, but if he were to bring Juan Soto back, it'd be one of the greatest trades, if not the greatest trade, in not only baseball history, but sports history. You get James Wood, you get Mackenzie Gore, you get C.J. Abrams, and there's still a couple of more guys, like Hassel you don't want to forget about, and Susana's been really, really good. And you brought the guy back in just a couple of years when your team was probably going to lose 90 to 100 games anyways, even if Soto is here? I don't know, man. But think about this, the drop-off. So we're taking a look at The Athletic, the top free agents that the Nationals could potentially sign as corner outfield bats. Juan Soto is obviously number one. Cody Bellinger, Teoscar Hernandez, some of these guys are probably unattainable for the Nationals if they're not going to spend money. Obviously, if you're going to bring Soto back, then that would mean you're going to have to open up the wallet big time. I don't know if that's something that would happen. We can all dream. But if you're not going to open it up for Soto, I doubt you're doing it for Bellinger or Teoscar Hernandez. Santander, maybe you consider him. Last night was electric at Camden Yards with the home run that he hit. So I don't know that maybe you could consider him. Tyler O'Neill, I'm not a huge fan of that. Michael Conforto, Verdugo, Max Kepler. Now you're getting into the range. When you start getting down past, you know, Anthony Santander, a Tyler O'Neill, I don't know, man. I like Tyler O'Neill. But at that point, I'd keep Jacob Young in center field. To me, if you get any of these top four guys, Santander, Teoscar, Cody Bellinger, obviously Soto, fine. I'll move Jacob Young into a fourth outfielder role. But if you're going to go with a Tyler O'Neill or a Michael Conforto or an Alex Verdugo, I'd rather just go ahead and keep Jacob Young in center field and move Dylan Cruz to right field. 800-636-1067, you want to hop in. Let's get out to PJ, who is in Reston. PJ, what's going on?
Hey, happy Saturday, everybody. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day. Hope it's starting out beautiful for everybody. So I have a little bit more of a kind of a question, because I admittedly, when it comes to hockey and baseball, I don't really watch it that much. I'm kind of like a very staunch, like, MMA, NFL, and basketball watcher.
Sure.
And but I will watch the Nationals and the hockey, just not as much, more of like a playoff kind of guy. But I've been following the Nationals a lot this year because even though I don't watch them that much, I really love the way that Mike Rizzo is rebuilding. He's one of the best GMs in baseball. And something that in this area, it seems like all of a sudden we are getting kind of a collective upgrading of our general managers. With Adam Peters, he's amazing. We already mentioned the gentleman with the Nats. The Washington Wizards got a good general manager, so it makes all the difference in the world. Now, when it comes to the outfield, so Jacob Young, if he's playing that well, and he's not like he's batting 200, he's not like Mendoza line, right?
Yeah.
He's 250, you know,
yeah.
It's not the best. So I would keep him. I would not even, if I'm coaching him up, I would not even worry about trying to get him to get like 10, 15 homers a year.
Agreed.
I would rather he just try to get that average up to like 275 or something, right? Now, my question for you is this. I'm used to seeing, like, the big, tall guys usually playing, like, first base, right? So I was surprised to hear that Aaron Judge is playing outfield, not first base. I'm not sure who the Nationals' first, out of ignorance, I don't know who their starting first baseman is. What if they move James Wood from outfield to first base? Definitely keep Young in center. You know, Dylan Cruz can be left or right field. But if you move James Young to first base, I don't know. I'm not know who the starting first baseman
sure.
is. But would that allow, like, a sweet-hitting third outfielder to be the starter? And happy day to everybody.
Appreciate it, PJ. Yeah, I think it's a decent idea, but I just don't see them ever moving James Wood out of the outfield, at least while he's young. You know, he's someone that, you know, you think of Aaron Judge, just to give you an idea. Aaron Judge, to me, we're watching football, so football's on the mind. You watch Aaron Judge, what does he look like? He looks like a tight end. You understand the body type I'm talking about. Beefy, lumbering when he runs, run you over, going over the middle of the field. James Wood has more of a body type of a small forward in basketball, in that he kind of glides around the field. If you were going to say that you were going to transition Aaron Judge to first base, I think it would make some sense. Like, you're like, okay, I think James Wood is too athletic to just put at first base at this point in his career. So I don't think they'd consider it right now. And the other point about this is, PJ's dead on. Like, who is their first baseman? It's been Yepes, it's been Chaparro, Joey Gallo's been there. They don't have a first baseman is the answer. And so if you're worried about, okay, where do they get the corner outfielder, I'd say instead of spending on a corner outfielder, go spend at first base and leave Dylan Crews in right field. And maybe Cody Bellinger fits into that mix. But if you want to sign a Paul Goldschmidt for a year, Christian Walker is going to be available. Pete Alonso is the big name on the market. I think you're better off trying to find a first baseman for the future than you are a corner outfielder and moving Crews to center field. I just think that's the one that makes the most sense. That's the position, probably a biggest need outside of ace, starting pitcher in the organization. We'll get back into some Nationals to close the show. Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports is going to join us at 2:30. But we got to talk about this beautiful board. J.P. Finley says from Damon and Oxon Hill, so we got to shout him out. But we're going to go through this all-time Redskins lineup that is just fantastic. We'll talk about it next. We'll go through each and every player. And honestly, it almost fits as an all-time Redskins list. And we'll talk about it next here on The Fan. At 1 o'clock, I just can't put it off any longer, Max. We got this beautiful board in here.
We have to talk about it.
Football cards from Damon and Oxon Hill in the B. Mitch and Finley studio. We got to go through this. This is fantastic. We're going to do that coming up at 1 o'clock. But right now, we're taking a look at Dylan Crews and where does he fit defensively? Because I think that one of the listeners to Bustin' Loose Baseball tweeted at me yesterday with a really good point, and Ben Dennison was the one, saying that if you're going to leave Jacob Young in center field and move Dylan Crews to right field for the long term, or at least for the next couple of years, the drop-off from JY to Dylan Crews has to be larger than the drop-off that you would get from a corner outfield bat to what you're going to get with Jacob Young's bat. And I don't have an issue necessarily with Jacob Young batting ninth, getting on base at a 330-ish clip, stealing a bunch of bags. But let's take a look at some free agents that maybe you could sign in the offseason that you could beef up the batting order a little bit and give some guys some help. I mean, realistically, you look at this offense right now, they're definitely going to need some help. They're just going to, and especially at some corner outfield spots, you could use it. Juan Soto's the big one. And this is a theory that I think is absolutely hilarious, and I hope it's true. I don't know that it is. The theory that part of the reason that Dylan Crews is debuting on Monday is because Juan Soto is coming back to town, and everybody wants, or Mike Rizzo wants Juan Soto to realize he could be playing with Dylan Crews and James Wood and company back at Nationals Park with a full park that's going to be excited. Might be a lot of Yankees fans, but it's still going to be a full park on Monday. He wants him to realize maybe you could come home. And I think it's also hilarious going on Twitter and you see this guy that's saying every single time, and heck, if you're going to be at the ballpark on Monday, I think this is a great campaign to get behind. So I want to make sure to spread the word. If you are at the park on Monday, when Juan Soto comes to the plate, we're chanting, "Come home, Soto."
Yeah, we are.
I love that. Absolutely love it. I think that Juan never wanted to leave here.
That's what he said. One pursuit takes, he's posting that graphic now.
Yeah, I don't think that he wanted to leave here. I don't know if it's necessarily something now that he wants to come back. But if you could bring Juan Soto back, Mike Rizzo would go down with one of the greatest trades. It's already incredible. But if he were to bring Juan Soto back, it'd be one of the greatest trades, if not the greatest trade, in not only baseball history, but sports history. You get James Wood, you get Mackenzie Gore, you get C.J. Abrams, and there's still a couple of more guys. Like Hassel, you don't want to forget about, and Susana's been really, really good. And you brought the guy back in just a couple of years when your team was probably going to lose 90 to 100 games anyways, even if Soto is here? I don't know, man. But think about this, the drop-off. So we're taking a look at the Athletic, the top free agents that the Nationals could potentially sign as corner outfield bats. Juan Soto is obviously number one. Cody Bellinger, Teoscar Hernandez. Some of these guys are probably unattainable for the Nationals if they're not going to spend money. Obviously, if you're going to bring Soto back, then that would mean you're going to have to open up the wallet big time. I don't know if that's something that would happen. We can all dream. But if you're not going to open it up for Soto, I doubt you're doing it for Bellinger or Teoscar Hernandez. Santander, maybe you consider him. Last night was electric at Camden Yards with the home run that he hit. So I don't know that maybe you could consider him. Tyler O'Neill, I'm not a huge fan of that. Michael Conforto, Verdugo, Max Kepler. Now you're getting into the range. When you start getting down past, you know, Anthony Santander, a Tyler O'Neill, I don't know, man. I like Tyler O'Neill, but at that point, I'd keep Jacob Young in center field. To me, if you get any of these top four guys, Santander, Teoscar, Cody Bellinger, obviously Soto, fine. I'll move Jacob Young into a fourth outfielder role. But if you're going to go with a Tyler O'Neill or a Michael Conforto or an Alex Verdugo, I'd rather just go ahead and keep Jacob Young in center field and move Dylan Cruz to right field. 800-636-1067, you want to hop in. Let's get out to PJ, who is in Reston. PJ, what's going on?
Hey, happy Saturday, everybody. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day. Hope it's starting out beautiful for everybody. So I have a little bit more of a kind of a question, because I admittedly, when it comes to hockey and baseball, I don't really watch it that much. I'm kind of like a very staunch, like, MMA, NFL, and basketball watcher.
Sure.
And but I will watch the Nationals and the hockey, just not as much, more of like a playoff kind of guy. But I've been following the Nationals a lot this year because even though I don't watch them that much, I really love the way that Mike Rizzo is rebuilding. He's one of the best GMs in baseball. And something that in this area, it seems like all of a sudden we are getting kind of a collective upgrading of our general managers. With Adam Peters, he's amazing. We already mentioned the gentleman with the Nats. The Washington Wizards got a good general manager, so it makes all the difference in the world. Now, when it comes to the outfield, so Jacob Young, if he's playing that well, and he's not like he's batting 200, he's not like Mendoza line, right? Yeah. He's 250, you know, it's not the best. So I would keep him. I would not even, if I'm coaching him up, I would not even worry about trying to get him to get like 10, 15 homers a year.
Agreed.
I would rather he just try to get that average up to like 275 or something, right? Now, my question for you is this. I'm used to seeing, like, the big, tall guys usually playing, like, first base, right? So I was surprised to hear that Aaron Judge is playing outfield, not first base. I'm not sure who the Nationals first, out of ignorance. I don't know who their starting first baseman is. What if they move James Wood from outfield to first base? Definitely keep Young in center. You know, Dylan Cruz can be left or right field. But if you move James Young to first base, I don't know. I'm not know who the starting first baseman is. But would that allow, like, a sweet-hitting third outfielder to be the starter? And happy day to everybody.
Appreciate it, PJ. Yeah, I think it's a decent idea, but I just don't see them ever moving James Wood out of the outfield, at least while he's young. You know, he's someone that, you know, you think of Aaron Judge, just to give you an idea. Aaron Judge, to me, we're watching football, so football's on the mind. You watch Aaron Judge, what does he look like? He looks like a tight end. You understand the body type I'm talking about. Beefy, lumbering when he runs, run you over, going over the middle of the field. James Wood has more of a body type of a small forward in basketball, in that he kind of glides around the field. If you were going to say that you were going to transition Aaron Judge to first base, I think it would make some sense. Like, you're like, okay, I think James Wood is too athletic to just put at first base at this point in his career. So I don't think they'd consider it right now. And the other point about this is, PJ's dead on. Like, who is their first baseman? It's been Yepes, it's been Chaparro, Joey Gallo's been there. They don't have a first baseman is the answer. And so if you're worried about, okay, where do they get the corner outfielder? I'd say instead of spending on a corner outfielder, go spend at first base and leave Dylan Cruz in right field. And maybe Cody Bellinger fits into that mix. But if you want to sign a Paul Goldschmidt for a year, Christian Walker is going to be available. Pete Alonso is the big name on the market. I think you're better off trying to find a first baseman for the future than you are a corner outfielder and moving Cruz to center field. I just think that's the one that makes the most sense. That's the position, probably a biggest need outside of ace, starting pitcher, in the organization. We'll get back into some Nationals to close the show. Bobby Blanco from Mass and Sports is going to join us at 2:30. But we got to talk about this beautiful board. J.P. Finley says from Damon and Oxon Hill, so we got to shout him out. But we're going to go through this all-time Redskins lineup that is just fantastic. We'll talk about it next. We'll go through each and every player. And it, honestly, it almost fits as an all-time Redskins list. And we'll talk about it next here on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.